Hello, welcome to episode 5. Can you believe it? 5. How amazing. Episode 5 of Forensic Forecast. Hello, Simon.
Hello.
You will notice a distinct difference with Simon this week. Say something else, Simon.
Well, I've managed to make some changes since last week, and I've managed to increase the volume on my end on my computer, and I've actually bought myself a decent microphone, showing that we do actually listen to and respond to the comments of listeners.
Yes. However, buying new pieces of equipment is quite an expensive thing. So, anyone who wants to offer us money, sustain
send us things
us,
for free, even that's fine.
Or send us things for free, exactly. Yeah, anything, but we accept nothing begrudgingly.
Yeah, we're open to bribes for things as well. If people want to send us things in response to us giving them a plug or anything, I'm happy to do that. I don't know about you.
I personally, I think you probably used the wrong choice of word there in accepting bribes.
Yeah, maybe.
Given the nature of the work that you do.
Well, obviously not in the respect of the nature of the work I do. I don't accept bribes.
A poor choice of words, I fear. Yeah, you might have your security clearance revoked if someone's listening to this of any importance.
Rubbish, I don't believe it.
So, anyway, how have you been?
I've been good. Yeah, that's about it, really. Right. Not a lot's changed for me in the past week.
I don't ask out of politeness. I only ask because people might be interested. I see you every day. I sit, less than a foot away from you almost for, 8.5 hours a day. So I'm not asking for my own benefit. I'm asking for all of you out there because I'm sure you really care how Simon's doing.
I'm touching.
Yeah, very. Right, so we've only got really a couple of things to talk about this week, but we thought we'd have a little bit of fun, and we're going to cover just one item of news today, and we're going to have a look at some comments and emails that people have sent in, and we'll respond to them as we go along. And Simon and I also are going to... Actually, let's start with this. Let's start with something which is quite amusing. When I was doing MET work, at my previous job, we would often hear the use of a word called forensicate. And it'd be used in the context of something like this. We would like for the examiner to forensicate the computer evidence and look for any evidence of such and such. Now, having tried to find the word forensicate anywhere, the only real place where I can find that it exists is on Urban Dictionary. What does forensicate actually mean, Simon?
Well, it actually means nothing at all to do with computer forensics. What it means is to read a passage of text or a book in a dramatic fashion. So if they're asking you to forensicate something, essentially what they're asking you to do is to read it to, like, a... read a brief, possibly like you're reading part of a play.
So forensicating the internet history might be www.google.com.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, the word forensicate doesn't necessarily mean what the police think it means. Those of you who have used the word before, wise to find a replacement. So, yeah. Just wanted to get that out of the way first. I have a feeling we should have saved that till later, to be honest.
Well, maybe, but I find that people quite often like to make up words to fit in a situation where a perfectly good word already exists.
Yes.
Forensicate's one of those examples. Examine works.
Yep. In fact, I had one of these at the office last week, didn't I, Simon?
Yeah, you did.
I used the word introducee. I had a Google Hello case, and in that in Google Hello when it was still active. It's now been taken off the Google servers. Thank goodness. Users could introduce someone on their friends list to someone else on their friends list. And so I said, well, you know, if you've got someone who's an introducer, then the other two must be introducees. And everyone in the office jumped on my back and said, that's not a word. And I looked it up. It didn't exist on dictionary.com. So I thought, right, well, it should be a word. So I sent an email to the Oxford English Dictionary.
See, I think that's probably a step too far, but carry on.
No, it is not a step too far. Right. I'm justified in this as the story unfolds. Right. So I sent that off to Oxford English Dictionary and said, I think this should be a word. As you have an introducer, you must surely have an introducee. And I got an email back from a woman there who said, actually, it is a word and it means exactly what you think it means. And so I turned around and I just basically raised my hand in the air and said, thank you. Yes, I was correct. There is such a word and it's staying in my report.
At which point we all continued to wind you up and tell you that it wasn't a real word for the rest of the day.
Yes, and as it happens, it didn't make it into the final draft of my report either. So all that fuss for absolutely nothing. Still, I will not be wrong. I must always be right. Still. Anyway, the one piece of news that I wanted to cover today was that last week, Paul Sanderson went on various message boards and said he was looking for people to test a new hex editor that he was writing. And he's looking for beta testers, essentially. And so signed up for it, got this hex editor through. And actually, it's very impressive, Simon. It's quite advanced in what it can do. I mean, it will load up raw disks, DD images, even encase files it'll even load in.
So what does it actually do, then? How does it differ from a normal text, a normal hex editor?
Well, it's got all the features you would expect from a hex editor, yeah. So, okay. Like, it will do all the standard stuff. Allows you to do all the editing and basically find and replace all that kind of stuff. But the other thing that it does is that you can select like a single byte, a single character, yeah, and you can shift it. You can shift it left, shift it right, rotate it left, rotate it right. So that's quite an advanced little thing there. Also, it's got loads of different translations as well. Like, so if you select like a bunch of hex from whatever, you know, from a file, you can actually translate a clump of hex into whatever it might be. So if it's like a little endian number, you can select it, and in the right hand pane it'll say, yeah, it's a little endian number, this is what is in little endian, and it'll go through, it'll say if this is a date, this is what the date would be, if this is a Unicode character, this is what the Unicode character would be, and it goes through, and it's got loads of different ones that you can go through. And one thing in particular that he's done is just today he's just released a new item for it, which it does the GSM 7-bit decoding, which, considering your new role as head of phone forensics at the company, you should find quite interesting.
Yeah, it could potentially be quite useful.
Why would it be useful? I know. Let's tell everyone else.
Well, hex dumping is it's a fairly new thing with mobile phones. Up until recently, the only real way to get information off a mobile phone was by logically extracting it by connecting to a phone and saying, have you got any text messages? If so, can you send me them? And the phone would respond in an appropriate way and the would send the information across to a computer, which could then save it, and that would make up your report. So if a message had been deleted and you asked for text messages, as far as the phone was concerned, that message that had been deleted no longer exists. But if you can take a hex dump of a phone, then that basically recovers everything live and not live on the phone and makes the recovery of deleted information possible. And so if you can interpret every part of a phone's hex dump, you can, in theory, be able to retrieve information that otherwise you wouldn't be able to get hold of.
So what we have essentially is that if you compare it to computers, for example, okay, if you get a phone in, previously, I mean, it's only up to like a couple of months ago even, isn't it?
Yep.
Right, so even just up to like a couple of months ago, it'd be like taking a ghost image of a hard drive, when all it does, it just takes all of the live files and the live file system and completely disregards deleted files, unallocated space, and anything which might be languishing therein. Correct?
Yep.
But now, a hex dump is basically the same as taking a DD image of a phone. Yep?
Yeah.
So, why... I mean, as far as a hex dump goes, can you not just load that into Encase then and just read it in there?
Well, Encase would basically see the hex dump as a bunch of hexadecimal characters. It wouldn't see it as anything. It wouldn't know how to interpret the data.
Okay. And that's why stuff like the GSM 7-bit decoding is so valuable, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously it has to go through certain stages of testing and all those kind of things before it's something you can really use in a forensic report and say this is completely accurate. But it's certainly good. It's good that people are starting to implement these kind of things. And it opens the door for more phones to be supported for recovery of deleted information, because there are software tools out there that will take hex dumps of phones and analyze them. But they don't usually support all phones around or even the majority of phones around. And it's... The further along it gets, the more use we're going to get out of this kind of information.
Very cool. Well, it's admittedly Paul Sanderson's tool, which is called Revenge, by the way. It's not the only tool which does the GSM decoding, is it? But it's still, for a free tool at the moment, I don't know if he's planning on actually selling it or not, but at the moment, as a beta tester... it's a free tool. For a free tool, it can give you quite good results. If you can verify it with other software, it'd be ideal to use it in your forensic report, really. However, yeah. It being beta, make sure you do validate your results in another piece of software.
Yeah, we know what happens when software hasn't been completely tested and then it's used for forensic examinations. We've heard of some of these issues with new versions of certain forensic software where results change depending on who's got a specific case open.
But when you say certain pieces of forensic software, do you mean all forensic software?
Well, some is more reliable than others, as far as I can tell. But there's one in particular that has big problems that need addressing.
Yeah, well, we've discussed all this before, and it's a hornet's nest. So, I think we'll leave it and move on. But if you want to test if you want to be a beta tester for the tool, you log in to a Forensic Focus or Digital Detective, and you'll be able to find Paul Sanderson's entries quite easy. If you know, it'll be quite close to the top of the list, I imagine. But it is quite impressive, and it's worthwhile having a look at. And thanks, Paul, for putting that out there for everyone to look at. Hopefully, when it's complete and beta testing, however you want to pronounce it, is over, please release it free. It'll be so useful. So anyway, yeah, it's a great tool. Go have a look at it if you have the opportunity. But that's the only real piece of news that I can think of to talk about this week, Simon, to be honest.
Yeah, there's not a huge amount of new news, I guess, this week.
New news.
It sounds stupid, doesn't it? But it, I don't know, it's probably right.
I suspect it is. Alright, well, let's... Seeing as this is our fifth episode now, we put up five episodes. You've put up the pictures from your little hard drive experiment. Mm-hmm. And I have the video here. I will get that up soon, but I need to tidy up the video a bit and make it a bit more attractive, mainly by trying to cut Simon out as often as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll see why when you see the video. He's very scary.
I don't blame anyone for that.
So, yeah, we've got five episodes. We've got that, and we've got the Facebook video, which I've put up as well. So we've had a few comments and emails and stuff like that, so we're going to go through a couple of them. Most of the people on there saying, you know, congratulating us and saying thank you very much for putting it out there. And all we can say to that is, well, we like doing it. If we didn't, then we simply wouldn't. It's a lot of fun, I think, at times, and we hope to be around for a while. So spread the word. Let people know that we're here. Ideally, we'd like to beat Cyberspeak, but I don't know if that's a realistic goal or not, but we'll see. So let's have a look here. There are a few. So someone asks, good work, guys. Just a question, if I might ask, is there any other forensic podcast out there in the World Wide West? And I think he means the World Wide Web, but we'll forgive him. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of others. If you go to iTunes, you type in computer forensics into the search bar, and when that loads up, you got like the little option on the left-hand side to just select podcasts. And if you do that, there's three podcasts which pop up there. Cyberspeak is the first one. Is the one that's most listened to, I should say. It's most popular. Then next there's us. And then after that, there's Dave at ProtoWise, who has his own... Well, I don't really think I can call it a podcast. It's a bit like Counting Sheep. If I'm really fair, I'm not here to slag off other people's podcasts, but
thought you'd do it while you're here anyway.
Well, you know what, right? I think I'm quite justified, right? Because I listened to the first couple of episodes of that, and to be quite honest, the man is probably not the greatest speaker, orator, or even forensicator. There you go. Use the word. Fantastic. Hey. He's not even the best forensicator in the world. And it is a little bit boring. And another reason I feel justified is that if you click, his podcast is called Digital Forensics Live. So, I mean, double-clicking on it, it brings... In iTunes, you've got, like, this little thing that pops up when you click on this arrow next to the name of the podcast. And poor man, he's had five episodes and he's had one review and he's got an average rating of 1 star out of 5, and the title of the customer review is "I Died of Boredom by Not Another Stupid Nickname," and the guy says, "Rambling, dull, poorly presented. This guy just seems to want to talk about himself in a boring, monotonous manner. I wasted 12 minutes of my life listening to this."
So I guess in some ways he's a bit like you. That's enough of the insults.
Everyone at home, or in your car, or at work, wherever you're listening to this, on the train even, just take a moment and just think of all the nice times you've had listening to Simon and I, because next week it will just be me. So Anyway, yeah, they're the only three forensic podcasts that I'm aware of. There might be more. I mean, obviously, you've got stuff like Securabit and Security Now, which are security, computer security podcasts, which kind of cross over to what we do. Yeah, I mean, they're the only ones that I'm really aware of. Do you know of any more, Simon?
I'm not aware of any more than those.
All right, fair enough. Someone else, Brandon Anderson, posted a message, said, great podcast, sorry I have no feedback, you're doing just fine. Thank you very much. That, remember, this was after probably, what, the first podcast, and so he's probably changed his mind since then. Longer episodes would be nice. So, all right, well, we're trying. Last week, I think we were pushing 50 minutes last week, weren't we, Simon?
I think we were.
And unfortunately, the longer the episode gets, the more difficult it is to go through and edit it, upload it, convert it. And the idea is that we want to just record it, try and record it all in one shot, have it uploaded to the internet so it's done within, you know, half an hour of us finishing the podcast, ideally. If there is a lot for us to talk about, then yes, we'll talk about it. But unfortunately, like this week, for example, there's not really a lot to talk about. Like I said before, we'll probably try and sort out a couple of specials in the future. There is one person in particular who gave me an idea that I'd like to do. If I can just find this comment, because this is quite interesting. Right. Great show, guys. This is from a guy called Ewok. Obviously a Star Wars fan. Great show, guys.
Think?
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. One problem I have with forensic podcasts in general, though, how many does he listen to? Maybe we should ask him how many he knows of. Is the way they play into the idea that computer forensic examiners have some sort of magical powers to recover data from drives. I thought you played into that a bit when you commented something along the lines of that people would want to gas forensic examiners if they knew what they could recover. Could you comment on whether you would be able to recover data from drives that have been shredded with NOPIX or DBAN, or if you can get around full disk encryption tools like DMCrypt or TrueCrypt? My understanding is that these tools work and that not even the mighty forensic examiners can thwart them. I'd be interested in hearing this from people within the industry, though. Keep up the show. Good luck. Peace. So, he talks about a couple of different things there. First of all, he comments on the fact that what Simon said in the first episode is that people... I can't remember exactly what you said, but... Like you said, it's along the lines of people would want to gas us if they knew what we could recover.
I think that's probably taken slightly out of context, but I think I know what they're getting at.
So,
at least I hope it was taken slightly out of context.
But you tell me if you agree with me or not, Simon. Mm-hmm. To me, I think that a lot of the stuff that we do recover from people's computers, people would be amazed at it. It would seem almost like magic. Like, I've seen computers where you've been able to go in. The computer's been used consistently for like the last 3 or 4 years, and you've been able to go in. You've been able to find emails and web pages and all kinds of stuff from like up to like 3 or 4 years ago. Things which people have deleted, which they thought were long gone. And that's the same for like all your pictures and everything else. And so that is, to me, I'm always quite astounded at the fact that we can do that.
Yeah, it's it depends entirely on the case, on the situation and everything else. But there are times when you recover information on computers, on hard drives, when you maybe don't think you're really going to get anything.
No.
Obviously, there's ways of making sure evidence can't be recovered from a computer. But there's ways around a lot of tools. Last week, an issue with TrueCrypt.
Say that again, sorry.
we mentioned last week, an issue with TrueCrypt.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, isn't it, is that good tools, that they are good tools, but they shouldn't be relied upon completely to secure your data. Because they're human-made, there will always be a problem. But, I mean, aside from that, okay, so let's have a look at TrueCrypt as an example, yeah? Now, let's look at the different ways that you might be able to use TrueCrypt and what that actually means then, okay? Mm-hmm. Right, first of all, if you're using TrueCrypt and you've created a volume, just a single volume, or a single volume with a hidden volume inside, in which you want to put all of your secret data, and that's just saved on your hard drive somewhere. Okay? A forensic investigator comes along, and one of the first, something that they'll try to do, it's probably one of the first things they'll try to do when they notice that a TrueCrypt volume is on there, or what they suspect to be a TrueCrypt volume, is that they'll create a word list of all the words and text strings and everything on that computer, which they'll then fire up and attack the TrueCrypt volume with. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, if you've used that password for anything else at all, a lot of people do keep the same password or the same 5 passwords or whatever, and use them for different things. So if you use the same password for TrueCrypt or for any encrypted volume and you've used that same password for something else, chances are they'll find it, they'll get into that volume. Okay, am I oversimplifying this?
No, I think it sounds about right.
Okay, so that can be done. And plus, we see stuff about the cold boot attacks and stuff and all the other bits and pieces of ways to recover passwords. So, if you've used TrueCrypt to encrypt your whole disk, that is very difficult. That can sometimes just put an end to an investigation because it's very, very difficult to break down. However, you're counting on the fact that your computer is not switched on when someone comes to knock at the door. And let's face it, I mean, the true computer user is probably sitting on the couch watching television with his computer on his lap, surfing the internet, checking his email, doing whatever, chatting to his friends, or updating his Facebook page, whatever. So if someone comes to the door in that event, you unless you're really paranoid, that they've got complete access to your computer anyway. And all they'll do then is that they can image the RAM, find the password, or they can just image it in situ. And they can just use something like FTK Imager to take a live image of it. And that will be enough. So, yes, TrueCrypt and other encryption tools can be quite difficult to get around, but they're not perfect, and they do leave traces behind. And that's something that you've really got to understand, that even though people will try and obfuscate data, you can still retrieve it. Now, Ewok also mentions stuff like Nopix or DBAN. For those of you who don't know, what's Nopix, Simon?
Nopix is a self-contained Linux distribution on a single disk, and it's bootable on a lot of computers. You stick the disk in and it will boot from the disk, and will load the operating system into RAM so it doesn't actually touch the hard drive.
Yeah. Do you know what DBAN is?
I'm not as familiar with DBAN.
Okay, DBAN is DBAN, which is Derek's boot and nuke, and all it is just a single disk. You boot from it into your computer, and then you choose what level you want to wipe your hard drive and press enter, and it does it. So essentially, it goes over, recursively wipes your hard drive. So You can either boot with Nopix or something similar, or DBEN, and completely wipe the hard drive. Now, I can understand why this would pose a problem for forensic investigators. I have to admit, in that regard, we likely will not recover anything from those hard drives. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's highly unlikely that we'll find anything.
There is research around that saying that, you know, if you put it through a magnetic telescope, you could remanufacture the magnetic bits based on the polarity of certain areas of the hard drive. And if you did that, you could actually reconstruct some of the data. The spindle or the little pin that reads the data might fluctuate from time to time and miss some sectors of the hard drive where you could find data in. And that's all well and good. But the fact is, even if that was accurate, and I'm not saying it isn't, but even if it was accurate, that is an extensive, long process which would take weeks and weeks and weeks to do. No forensic investigation can afford to take that long unless it's like some multinational terrorism organisation which is being investigated. So, yeah.
Yeah, the expense of doing that and the cost of going through those sorts of methods would require it to be an incredibly important bit of information that they were looking for.
Yeah. Now, there's another side to this coin, though, is that if you have wiped a disk, if you've got a wiped hard drive that you've done with DBEN or something like that, wiping is an extensive process. Even if you've got a fast computer with a fast hard drive, it can still take several hours to wipe it. So if you get a knock on the door saying, you know, and it's the police, for example, come to take your computer away for forensic analysis because you've downloaded the latest episode of Lost or whatever. Don't do that. It wasn't permission. You do not have time to wipe your computer. If your computer has been wiped previously, the chances are that you've used it. You're not going to just wipe a disk and just put it aside, are you? What are the chances of that?
No, they're quite slim. Usually you wipe a disk that's going to be in use.
Yeah. So you wipe the disk, you put it back in your computer or put it back in its caddy, and the next time you use it, information is saved to it. Whether you want to save information to it or not, there will be information saved to it. And it might not be a vast amount of information, and the forensic investigation will certainly be quite scuppered by the fact you've wiped the hard drive. But a lot of things happen when you turn a computer on. A lot of things happen whenever you visit a website or anything like that. There's other anti-forensic tools as well that say, oh, we'll wipe your internet history, or we'll wipe your user activity and stuff like that. And they all profess to do a good job. But the thing that they don't do, I mean, you've got plenty of other areas to look at. You go to the registry, you go to restore points, unallocated space, page files. It's just full of useful information. And there's not any real valid way of going through and covering all of your tracks and still be a normal computer user. You would have to be some kind of security freak. And what you would do is you spend 5 minutes browsing the web and, you know, or downloading. Let's say you spent, you know, 5 minutes downloading an episode of Lost. I know that's quite quick, but bear with me. You'd then have to go through and spend a good 15 or 20 minutes, possibly more, eradicating all traces of you having downloaded that in the first place. So it becomes a complete and utter waste of time. And there's not really many people on the planet who'd want to do that, is there?
No, it's you have to be incredibly security conscious, which some people are. But then you have to go beyond that and you have to spend you have to essentially timetable your time. So you do whatever illegal or whatever thing you want to protect from people, and then you spend the next little while clearing up after it. So you need to schedule about 3 times more time probably for eradicating evidence than you do doing the thing in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, even if you've got, like, if someone sends you, like, an encrypted email or something like that, you could delete the email, and it would probably be hard to recover that from an allocated space because there's no real structure to it. But the unencrypted text could very well be sitting in your page file because of it being stored in RAM at some point. So you'd have, like you said, you'd have to schedule your time and really be mad on security in order to stop anybody finding anything on your computer. So I hope that kind of explains it. What we might do is that in a few episodes' time, we might take a look at different tools used to wipe software and see if any of them, we'll see which ones of them do what they say they do, and which ones don't quite cut it. So you know which to choose if you're trying to wipe your hard drives.
And the other thing is that you may be able to, while doing a forensic examination, be able to tell which tool has been used by the way wiping's been done.
Yep, absolutely, because each one might have its own signature which can be detected later, so you can say, well, yeah, this person has used DBEN to wipe his hard drive, or this guy has used Nopix to do that, so on and so forth. So, yeah. Okay, Luby has said that the video podcast on Facebook is an excellent way to support and assist the community. Thank you very much. I've posted about the podcast at the Multimedia Forensics Forum, and he says it's an underused resource. And we'd always recommend that people go and check out, like, all the forums for forensics, because no man, as I say, is an island. And, you know, especially in this job, you can't... No one knows everything, apart from me.
Yeah.
I'm totally kidding. But it's a great way to share information. Multimediaforensics.com is one resource. Forensic Focus, another good resource. Digitaldetective.co.uk, another fantastic resource. The Forensic Wiki. You know, the list, it goes on and on and on. And they're always useful to go to if you have a question about something. Let's see. Oh yeah, someone commented on the on our opening music. Right, I have to say, right, I am not musically gifted at all. I'm a really good singer, as Simon will confirm.
In some people's ears,
mostly mine. yeah, I'm gonna go try out for American Idol and X Factor and all that. I'll win it, trust me. I am that person. I'm that person who shows up and Simon Cowell says, no, 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 no. And I walk out the room crying because my career's over. But anyway, so yeah, I'm not musically talented at all. So what I've done for the opening and closing theme music for the podcast is that I've used some default music from GarageBand, depending on where you're from, and just picked the music that I thought was probably the most appropriate, and it just so happens that it's the same music that CyberSpeak use for their little mail segment of their podcast. So, yeah, thanks for pointing that out, Jim. Appreciate it. Go away. I don't mean... So if anyone is aware of any decent music, which preferably is royalty-free because I have no money, byproduct of having children, then please let me know. and we'll look into using that instead, because obviously we'd want to separate ourselves from the other forensic podcasts around, and we don't want to all sound the same. So, yeah, let us know if you know of anything like that. But something which occurs to me as we go through these comments, it's quite amazing to me, because, I mean, we're seeing people comment from, like, we got Remen Verkerk, and I'm really sorry because I completely messed your name up, from the Netherlands. And thanks for commenting, thanks for listening. I mean, we've got people from the United States, from Spain, from the Netherlands. There's just people listening from all over the place, and I feel really, really humbled by all that, to think that here we are, you know, I'm sitting in my home, Simon's sitting in his home, just a computer and a couple of microphones, and that we're out and we're reaching people and talking about something that we care about and actually, you know, affecting people. And it's fantastic. Well, thank you very much for everyone who's written and added comments and everything else. I don't think there's... Oh, yeah. Oh, I actually have to read one of the comments. I have to read two more. Sorry, just two more, and then we'll call it done on the comments, okay? In my previous job, I worked with this guy called Jared. Now, I love Jared to death. He's fantastic. And he added a comment last week, and I agree with him, and I'm sure most other people did. Please buy Simon a real mic. I can't hear a word he's saying. Whether that's a blessing in disguise, I'll never know. Well, this week you will know. And
yeah,
and you'll regret it.
You're probably going to be sorely disappointed. You suggested the idea.
And then someone commented on your little experiment as well, Simon.
Yeah. A
guy called Brandon said, sorry, I don't want a slightly damp, rattling paperweight. I already have one. I have an old drive lying around, so I decided to put the platters in bleach. And to my surprise, it has no damage other than to the fact that it's broken open. So, yeah, another little experiment on what to do with a hard drive that doesn't make any difference whatsoever.
Yeah. As I said when I heard that comment the first time, it's just... it's surprising just how much these things can take, really. But yeah, I'm sure we'll find a way to destroy it in the future.
Well, I reckon, right? You've seen that experiment, haven't you? If you get, like, an old rusty penny and you drop it in a can of Coke and you leave it for, like, half an hour or something, you come back and the penny's all shiny again. Mm. There's something about Coca-Cola and other cola products. I'm not endorsing one over the other.
Well, you're not really endorsing any of what you're saying.
Well, unless someone wants to pay us for endorsing, in that case, then we'll quite gladly. Pepsi, you know, we're open to offers. I'm kidding once again. But yeah, I reckon if you use some cola product, I reckon it would cause more damage than bleach or even a mild pineapple and orange juice drink or whatever it is you used.
Yeah, I kind of wussed out a bit, really, and just got something that was cheap.
So, we might try it with cola next and see if that makes a difference. My bet is that it would make a significant difference. But we'll wait and see. We'll have a look. So, once again, thanks for everyone who writes in. You know, email, comments, or, you know, or shouting things to us as you walk down the street. It's fantastic, and we really appreciate it. And I'm quite amazed that there's not very many abusive ones. Not that I'm complaining, but the law of averages suggests we should have at least two or three, and there's not even one yet. Unless you count Jared's.
Well... maybe his next one will be. But anyway, I guess I just discovered today some comments have been posted about me on something else that was probably a little bit more derogatory than the comments we've had so far on Forensic Podcast.
I've not heard this.
I pointed out some comments on something else online that I'm sure you've been wanting to refer to week after week and keep forgetting. You don't remember what it is?
No.
No? If I say YouTube?
Yes. Yes, finally. Oh, you're going to regret reminding me of that.
I know. I don't know why I did it.
Yeah. Some weeks ago, we went over to Simon's house, having just bought the new Wii Fit, and hooked it up to Simon's Wii, and he was doing the little hula hoop game on it. And I thought it'd be a bit of a laugh if I pulled out my phone and recorded him and posted it on YouTube. I can guarantee when this podcast goes up, there will be a link there for everyone to have a look at.
Oh, thank you. Not that they need a link. It's easy enough to find if you know what to look for.
Well, yeah, if you look at... If you go onto YouTube and type Simon Wii Fit, I think is the second. You're the second one down. Let me just confirm that. Hang on a second. You
now that'll no doubt change depending on how many people actually click on it, but it's certainly in the
right,
top
so
few.
So type in Simon Wii Fit. Yep, you're currently the second one down. It says my brother Simon fancies himself as a bit of a hula hooper. What do you think? And the title of it: Simon does a little jiggle on Wii Fit. And it's worth watching because it's funny. It's under a minute, so it only it doesn't waste much of your time. But yeah, go have a look because it is rather amusing. And I'll put a link on the website anyway. But yeah, people have been quite insulting, I think, as well. You are the coolest guy I've ever seen. You're my hero, man. Wish you were my dad. I love you, Dad.
Unfortunately, that's the best of the comments.
What a gay boy. What a loser, man. What a geek. Simon is a doofus. They can't spell doofus correctly.
Yeah, they can't spell doofus correctly, and they're the people that actually go around commenting on YouTube videos. I think we know who the real geeks are. But there you go.
Great stuff. All right. Well, I think we'll call it a day there. Oh, sorry. I had one more thing to say. The F3, that's the First Forensic Forum. It's an organisation here in the UK which most forensic practitioners, computer forensic practitioners, are members of or have associations with in some degree. They've got their conference where everyone gets together in mid-November. Now, one thing that I'm campaigning for is that I know it's probably too late for this year, but the following conference, the next year, I'd like to see a competition. And I'd like this competition to be between all the different companies and organisations which attend the conference. And the competition would be a bit like taking your ENCE or your CCE. And what you would do is that you would sit down with all of your colleagues, with a computer, with a piece of evidence acquired onto it. And you've got a set of goals and objectives that you have to meet. And the first team that meets all those goals and objectives is the champion and holds the trophy or whatever prestigious award for that year until the next conference. Now, I've mentioned this at work and, you know, people have raised their eyebrows and said that doesn't sound like a bad idea. What do you think, Simon? Good?
I think it will be interesting to see how something like that would work. I think it's certainly worth a go.
Like with any idea, it needs polishing. It needs to be properly looked at. But if there's anyone from F3 listening, please just endorse that idea because I just think it'd be fantastic. And all you guys who listen in Bury, you know I'm talking to you. I just think it would be fantastic for us to do. And uh, I really, I'd really think it'd be a lot of fun, and the most exciting thing to happen to well, me really. But I just think it'd be cool. I think it'd be a lot of fun, and then, you know, branch out, and we could have, like, you know, the Americans could have their own tournament. You know, the Australians could have their own tournament.
Are you slowly developing the idea of a computer forensics World Cup?
There you go! Fantastic! You could be, you know, champion of the world at computer forensics. What an honour that would be! Computer Forensics World Cup, where the winner of each competition goes to, you know, these international competition and, you know, lose to the Americans. actually lose to the Indonesians from the sounds of things. So, yeah.
Well, it'll be lose to whoever pays the most, probably.
Well.
And can attract the, well, the people with the greatest skills. Well,
politics aside, I just think it'd be a good test of skill and knowledge. So, yeah, I hope that I can push that idea forward. And if it's not done at F3, then you never know. How about a forensic forecast-sponsored event where we just gather people together from across the country and do a competition like that as well? And then we could also have someone organise one in the States and so on and so forth. I think either way, this is something that I'd be interested in doing.
It's the kind of thing that you don't really have to be in the same place to do either, really.
No, exactly.
It's something you could do. You could post an image for it online and people could download it and do the examination and have some sort of submitting procedure and a means of announcing a winner or something. But I think there's certainly scope for a computer forensics competition out there. I think it could be fun.
Yeah. So we'll have a think about it, and we'll try and come to some decision if the guys at F3 don't want to go through with it. Which is understandable. They don't want to be humiliated by me.
sorry. I'm sure that's what it is.
Just before we go, I just want to congratulate Jared. We mentioned him a couple of times in the podcast, but he's just left university just a couple of months ago, and he's landed his first post-degree job. And so I just want to say congratulations to him, and I know he's going to do really well. So well done, mate. Right. Well, you had a story. You had a funny story to tell.
It's a bit of a stupid story, and it's got absolutely nothing to do with computers whatsoever.
Who cares?
But it's quite funny. I certainly had a bit of a laugh when I first read it.
Okay.
It's a story about a 56-year-old man from Wisconsin who has been arrested for shooting, not at someone, but at something. He was actually arrested for shooting his own lawnmower when it failed to start. And he was arrested for possession of a short-barreled shotgun or rifle and disorderly conduct. And the crazy thing is that he could face a fine of up to £5,000 or $10,000 and 6 years or so in prison.
Unbelievable.
For shooting a lawnmower. And you just think, well, there's more important things for people to be arrested and in charged with, really. But at the same time, shooting a lawnmower, I mean, we all get agitated at things, but as frustrated as I get at my own tools or computers, I wouldn't be shooting at them.
Now, are you completely sure of that?
Well, I wouldn't be shooting at them mostly because I don't really have firearms and they're not really legally obtainable in this country.
No, but if you had a gun and you were in the middle of a forensic examination and you'd been running a keyword search which had been running for 2 days straight on a massive piece of evidence, and then suddenly the tool which you were using decided to crash and just say, this has encountered an error, do you wish to report it to Microsoft? Are you saying you would not be tempted to pull out the gun and blow the computer away?
Well, See, I personally, if I was going to destroy something in a fit of anger, I would prefer to do it with like a club or something, just something a bit more active than a gun. So like hitting it, throwing it around, something like that.
So a gun's far too easy.
Satisfaction in shooting something.
Because you don't actually cause the damage the gun does.
Yeah, exactly.
Guns are not guns do not kill computers. Simon does.
It's true, actually. It seems that I emit a certain field that seems to disrupt and ruin things when I go near them. It's happened more than once.
Ah, there's plenty of people like that. all right. Well, I think, finally, third time round, I think we're done. We've lasted nearly an hour, even though there was no news. Unbelievable. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening again. Hopefully something exciting happens this week, or we might even be tempted to go and try and do a special episode of something, who knows. But thanks for listening. We appreciate it. We appreciate all the comments. Keep them flowing in. We'd especially like to know what you'd think about this competition between people to see who is the best. Please let us know. All right, well, thanks for listening again. Have a pleasant evening, or day, or it's evening now as I record this. That's why I say that. But we'll catch you later. Bye for now. Bye.